That's perfect timing because Chuck Jones just arrived, just came into the studio, sat down. Welcome back, Chuck.
All right, let us also, as we get into Chuck, let us, for anybody who's sitting there and doesn't quite know who we're talking about, this gentleman here created and brought to life Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Elmer Fudd, Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote, Marvin Martian, Pepe Le Pew, many, many others of the Warner Brothers classic cartoons. This year, we just saw him a month or so ago receive a Lifetime Achievement Award and Academy Award for his work over a lifetime of bringing the cartoons to the big screen.
60 years in animation. Now, usually when he visits us, he brings a cell and he gives it to us from one of the cartoons. This time, he brought, and this is only, a month old now? The Oscar, the Academy Award he won.
It's sitting right here.
A few weeks ago.
And we'll go ahead and tell you what you've heard other people say. They're a lot heavier than you would think. Really heavy. A good workout, actually. You were just to curl it while you're in the car.
Now, welcome back, Chuck. How are you?
Good to be back. I've always enjoyed you, Birds. I just can't get up early enough to hear you.
Now, this is your second Academy Award, but this particular one you were talking about means so much more because it is an honorary award for a lifetime of work that you've put forth.
Yes, you have to have lived a lifetime.
To get one of these.
Which does help out.
Doesn't require any special talent, but you have to have lived a lifetime. So I'm entering my 84th year, and I just got back from Washington where Herb Block, the great cartoonist of the Washington Post, they had a party for him because he's been drawing cartoons for the Washington Post for 50 years.
And excellently done also.
Marvelous. One of the great cartoonists of all time. I think one of the greatest political forces of my lifetime, which is a lot more extended than yours.
You talked about last time you were here a really very interesting scenario and a story in that when you and the guys and gals that you were working with when you first were starting out and you all kind of had gotten together, was it Tex Avery that you were talking about was who all of you would work with and that he kind of passed down the way that he liked to draw cartoons and the creative force that goes behind them?
Well, Tex came over and was really the guiding force of the kind of animation he did. Nobody had ever done that kind of thing, that absolute nutty, wild timing and so on. People have tried to imitate it. You find it all studied, probably studied it long term. Flashing all over television today, but Tex was a very conservative man in many ways. In other words, when he would start out in any cartoon with a feeling that it was going to be a normal cartoon, and then suddenly it would explode. and these people think you always explode, and of course you don't. And that was what made his picture so remarkable. You knew that the explosion was coming because you didn't know when. But yes, Bob Clamp and Tex, and Bo Cannon, who went on to do Jeremy Boing Boing and things, we all worked together there. We didn't know that we were doing anything historic.
Just working.
Or hysteric, for that matter. As a matter of fact, I don't know anybody that I've ever known that ever accomplished anything that really knew that they belonged in history. I belong in history because I've been at it longer than anybody else.
Very historical.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about Wile E. Coyote. I heard somewhere, somebody told me that the inspiration for Wile E. Coyote was from your own lack of skill with tools. Is that correct?
Oh no, that would be Daffy more than anything else. But that comes back to the same old story, doesn't it? That where do you get your characters? And there's only one place that any actor, any director, or any cartoonist can find his character. That's inside himself. Because the core of every character is within you. We all are the ultimate failures. Yeah, we dream about being the heroes.
And the Bugs Bunny, for instance.
Yeah, well, I dream about being Bugs Bunny,
right.
But I want to wake up on Daffy Duck
or
the Coyote. And before I proceed, I would like to say that there were so many wonderful people that were contributed to these characters. I, there was not a, uh, I, because as you get older, one of the values of getting older, if there are values, is that there are fewer people around to contradict you.
Which is nice.
So I can say, you know, I can take credit for almost anything.
Well, sure, go ahead.
And, I forgot, no, it's like, you know, I tell my great-grandchildren that I, you know, what a nice man Lincoln was, you know, and he misunderstood him in many ways.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting with the cartoons and the characters involved, and that it's much like maybe some characters on this program or some characters on the Saturday Night Live, in that when they first start out, they are kind of what they are, and then as time goes along, the characters will change a little bit and will become more of maybe which is the best way to go, which is the case with Daffy Duck. If you look at a very early Daffy Duck cartoon compared to one that was made, say, 15 years.
He was actually, Daffy in the very first ones. I mean, he was a loon.
Right. Right, exactly. Just,
he was crazy.
And Bugs.
And Bugs, the same thing.
And Duck Disease.
But when after Tex left and went to MGM and did some great films over there, why, Tex, Prince Fraley and I probably were then pretty much in charge of developing the characters, and we realized that pretending you're crazy is much nicer than being crazy. And not just the Spaniards used to chain an idiot and let him foam at the mouth. They thought that was very funny, you know. And since that time, crazy is not enough.
Right.
Pretending you're crazy. Groucho Marx pretends that he is crazy, but he isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know he isn't, and you know he's playing at it. So the Roadrunner, however, is just a force. He's not a personality. He's more like electricity.
But he has a personality.
He has, yes.
A great personality.
But the people say, why would anybody chase anything like that for food? Well, why? You have friends who would do almost anything for 1 ounce jar of caviar,
mm-hmm,
rather than 50 hot dogs,
mm-hmm,
for the same money. You know, I would choose the hot dogs anytime.
Absolutely.
But there are some people who die for that, you know. They die for little things like diamonds. You know, like Mark Twain said, the diamonds are the hardest substance in the world, particularly to get back.
Chuck, who wrote the majority of dialogue in the cartoons?
Well, in my case, the ultimate dialogue I wrote. Because only by translating into my own terms of how I would think. But Mike was brilliant at writing dialogue, but he wrote in a broad sense, and then I had to bring it down till it fit the character.
Mm-hmm.
You must understand that we can never write a line that for Daffy that Bugs could say, in the same sense that Groucho wouldn't say the same line that Chico would.
Sure. Yeah. Daffy couldn't be too cool. I mean, Bugs got all the cool lines.
Well, a good way of stating it would be that Bugs talks and Daffy talks too much.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the history of almost all of our problems, isn't it?
Interestingly enough, I was watching a movie on Showtime or HBO the other day. I kind of popped on it while I was flipping around. And it was a movie about a real live-action kid who fell into his television and found himself in a cartoon. And in the cartoon, he's in this house, and he is a cartoon figure, and the vacuum cleaner came alive and was coming after him. And the kid is sitting there thinking, okay, what do I do? What would I do if I were a cartoon? I am a cartoon, so what am I going to do? Here's what they always do in the cartoons. And he wrote a letter very quickly and mailed it off to the Acme Company. And, of course, seconds within mailing it, he got whatever he needed to save his life.
It was an automatic dog.
Yes, it was, as a matter of fact. It certainly was. You know the movie that we're talking about?
Sure, I directed it.
Oh.
All right. Good that you're in.
Okay, good that you're here. You're right. Well, yeah. You know what? The cartoon work on that was fabulous.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest picture in the world.
But still, the cartoon stuff was great. I remember thinking, wow.
And you bring up a good point. You can always tell a Chuck Jones cartoon, because it's more detailed than the rest. I mean, the most detail goes into yours, and I've always wondered whose idea was it to put Bugs in drag the very first time. And did you have any negative connotations from whatever organization?
Well, at that time, which was before you guys were even born, which it may be difficult for you to imagine time when you weren't born, but and I'm sure the public would agree that it's far better you're here.
Depending on the day, Chuck.
But the thing, at that time, if a man dressed up like a woman, there was no transvestite. Nobody even knew the term.
It was just funny.
It was funny. Mm-hmm. Like,
Milton Berle.
A man would put on a woman's hat, and they thought it was funny. They didn't think the guy was turning into something opprobrious.
Little do they know, he really liked it.
Yeah, he did. Then he found that out as they went along. Yeah.
I mean, Wayne's World even dealt with it in the first movie, Wayne's World. Garth looked at Wayne and said, when you see Bugs Bunny in drag, do you get sexually turned on? I mean, it's one of the most fabulous things that Bugs has ever done. Marvin Martian. Oh, we got to take a break. All right, well, we have tons of questions. We're going to take these phone calls when we come back from the commercial break, so please don't go. Okay.
We got a problem with the furniture here.
Welcome back. We have Chuck Jones in the room with us.
For a while.
Chuck, now, you told me the name of this last time, and I want to ask you again so you can tell me. It was a Tex Avery cartoon, and it caught me by surprise. I was watching the Cartoon Network one day while having lunch, and this cartoon popped on about I think it was a cow or something. And his uncle comes to his house in a big fancy car and takes him to town. And they're in a club and they're watching the show. And the country hick is going to whistle, and his uncle plugs up his whistling mouth with his finger, and the whistle goes down his arm and out his own mouth.
That's right.
Do you remember the name of that cartoon, by chance?
No, it's followed up from. Red Hot Riding Hood. It may have been Red Hot Riding Hood. There were two or three of them.
But it was a Tex Avery cartoon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All of those were Tex Avery's.
That's about as funny as it gets, those cartoons.
That. And one of the strange things about that was that during the war, and it's hard, I suppose, for many people today, young people, to realize there was a war in which everybody was promoted to the idea of winning a war. Because you had great villains, which you don't have in most wars, because you had Adolf Hitler and Hirohito and Mussolini and all those lovely people to hate. Well, Tex made a picture called The Blitz Wolf. Mm-hmm. And it was the same wolf, only this time it was Adolf Hitler. And he took a terrible beating. Well, they had a producer there. I won't use his name because he's the kind of man that's probably still alive and be 105 and still irritating the world. Mm-hmm. He had one thing in common with George Washington is these dentures didn't fit. So he talked on his teeth like this. And he'd come in, Tex said he'd come in sometimes. Say, Tex, have you noticed they call him Fred rather because his name was Fred, so he called everybody Fred. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed how beautiful the eucalyptus trees are along Sepulveda Road? And he went on. He said, I was just looking at the storyboard of the Blitz Wolf, and he said, don't you think this is 1944, right in the middle of the war? And he said, do you think you're being a little rough on Mr. Hitler? He says, we don't know who's going to win the war.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine that?
No.
He was a brilliant man. He was in charge of animation and MGM.
Many people may not know this, but they'll be very excited to know that Chuck Jones Film Productions are making new cartoons for theaters, including Chariots of Fur, that'd be a Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, and Another Froggy Evening with Michigan J. Frog. That's not been released yet. What are the differences these days of making feature cartoons for movie theaters?
You mean 6-minute cartoons?
Right.
Then
we're
back. Because everybody's making features.
Right. For the movie theaters back then.
Well, when Bob Daly and Terry Semel, who are the heads of Warner Brothers, decided through the advice of John Schulman, who's my friend over there, asked me to come over and make some cartoons, I said that I would come over and do so, providing that the end purpose of my coming there was to get rid of me. Because hiring an 80-year-old man to do cartoons seems a little chancy, you know. Mm. And I said, the other thing was, and the reason I wanted to get rid of me was because I wanted to set up a situation where you where young people could come in, and people under 40 and hopefully under 30 would come in with new ideas, give new adventures to the old characters, and invent new adventures with new characters. In other words, the purpose of this was not for me to make cartoons, but for me to help young people get started in making cartoons.
Well, it must have been fabulous when the line was as long as, five city blocks at the door, young people wanting to come in and do this.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they are. They're willing to do what is necessary. I don't know if I ever told you that when I went into art school, then it was this professor got up in front of us. He wasn't really a professor, he was a maestro, a great artist, got up in front of us, and he said, looked down at us, and he said, "Every one of you birds has 100,000 bad drawings in you. The sooner you get rid of them, the better it'll be for everybody." He said, "The better it'll be for everybody." You know, that's wonderful. And rather than saying it's bad for you, he wanted to realize that the public is our duty. And that's the hardest thing for many people to understand, is that although you must make pictures for yourself, you have to face the audience, no matter what it is. It may not even be in your lifetime. Vincent van Gogh never faced an audience. He only sold two paintings in his lifetime to his brother, which is like striking out the pitcher. But nevertheless, eventually, his paintings had to face the audience. And now they're worth millions and millions and millions of dollars.
So do you enjoy playing the role as the mentor?
Well, I would if I thought of myself that way.
But you don't change.
I mean, you always have extraordinary doubts about your own ability. The day you lose that is the day you'll stop being any kind of trick, make any pretense.
Maybe you can help with this, because this is just an observation I've made, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's a fact. When you watch some of the Bugs Bunnies, the Daffy Ducks, the Coyotes, this is also the case with some Foghorn Leghorn, even Tom and Jerry for that matter. The cartoons have such the ones I'm talking about from the 60s and the 50s, they have such a robustness. The color is full, and the activity of the character is so almost human in a sense, as compared to the cartoons of now, in most cases, even with some of the Disney stuff now, it's not the same. It's not as active or full or animated or something. I don't quite understand what it is that grabs me or lets me know that it's different. Can you explain?
No, I can't explain how that works, but I do know the abiding factor in any creative work is that you must never talk down to your audience. You must be aware of them. But one of the venal sins of all time is to write down to children. And to think that your audience are a bunch of dumb cops is the dumbest thing that you can envisage. So you must, at least you owe an audience the best you can do. And that's not true today. So many of the people are writing down. They say, an example of that would be that when Mike Maltese and I worked together, we turned out an hour a year. That's 10 6-minute cartoons.
Wow.
And we thought we were put upon, because at Disney they did maybe 6 or 7 cartoons a year, and maybe 5. And so we thought we were terribly put upon. But it turned out it was a very good thing for us, because you must work under a discipline. I mean, you guys, Mark and Brian, work under an extraordinary discipline. And if you went out and were given all the time that you were allowed, you would be lost. Because once you're used to working, like Mondrian, the great painter who painted, lines parallel to the sides, and he said, "I cannot envisage not working in a discipline. A discipline is vital, and if you're open at both ends, goodbye. Your creativity goes out."
Which is why I never studied for a test more than one day before the test. Discipline of cramming.
There you go.
Never. Never done that. All right, let's go to Dave on 7. Dave, you're on the air with Chuck Jones.
Hi, guys. Hi, Chuck.
Hi,
just want to say that I'm a huge fan of Chuck's. Loved your work my whole life. I'm 29 now, and I have a son, and I can't wait to turn him on to Bugs Bunny. My question is, do you have a favorite cartoon or a favorite character?
Well, how many children do you have?
I have just one son.
Okay, if you have more than one, you're going to have a favorite. but it would be very wise for you to keep that to yourself. Otherwise, you have a war on your hands.
I guess
so. The same thing holds true with us. If I said Daffy Duck is my favorite character, then I would be putting more effort into Daffy than I would the other characters. Actually, I'm more comfortable with Daffy because he's much more like I am. Like when I did Out of Grinch Stole Christmas, I loved doing it because everybody hates Christmas a little bit, and here's the guy that hated it completely. So the first time in my life I could haul off and hate Christmas the way it should be hated.
Fully.
So when Daffy then is, I'm comfortable with him, but he certainly isn't my favorite because he's one of the, he's kind of anti-kindness.
You know, you bring up another point that was interesting, in that this year, for some reason, and I've never really noticed this, I only knew that I really loved How the Grinch Stole Christmas, but this past year, as I'm sitting there watching it with my kids, I became aware of just how much of another color in the cartoon the voice of Boris Karloff was. How wonderful he was in that selection. And what an odd selection to choose Boris Karloff's voice to narrate that cartoon.
Did you know him before that cartoon?
No, I didn't. I knew him, but he didn't know me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he had done a lot of recordings. You know, he recorded the Just So stories and the Jungle Book and all these things. And many people didn't know that he was a wonderful narrator.
Nobody can say the two words roast beast quite like he could.
When he got up in front of the microphone there and started reading this thing, I realized I didn't belong in the same area with him.
He's
he was
so
a
good.
Giant, and what a wonderful, dear man he was as a personality. And he would praise the way it was written. I loved the rhythm of it.
There you go. That's got to make you feel good. He looks down from the microphone and says, "This is great stuff."
Yeah.
Ah.
Very dear.
Well, he really did. Should be appreciated for his work there, because it was another labor of love that made
right.
that the classic that it
That's
is.
That's right.
Okay, let's go to Kevin on line one. Kevin, you're on the air with Chuck Jones.
Jim?
Kevin, you there? All right, we lost Kevin. Jim on 14.
Jimmy, how you doing there, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
You're on the air.
All right. Hi, Mr. Jones.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. It's an honor and a privilege to talk to you. I've been a fan of yours and Mr. Freeling for years and years.
Yeah, we just lost friends. He was a great loss. A wonderful man. I learned so much of what I knew about him, about animation from him. His timing is exquisite.
Yeah.
Some of the greatest things ever done. He made a picture called Birds Anonymous, which was a magnificent one of the greatest cartoons ever made. We miss him.
Yeah, me too. I got a couple of questions for you from a couple of different people. Hold on a second here.
Hi, Mr. Jones. This is Pat Meg. And I'm really a great fan of yours and, of course, the late, great Mel Blanc. And I was wondering if you could tell me any stories about him. And hold on, Tex wants to talk to you, too.
Hey, Mr. Jones. Hey, this is Tex. Yeah, I'm an aspiring voice actor, and just kind of wondering if you could give me any advice.
Is this a casting session?
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you, Jim has turned it into that, hasn't he?
Jim's pretty good, though.
Yeah, that sounded great, Jim.
What am I supposed to do, answer this?
Yeah, he wants to know if you have any advice for him as an aspiring voice actor.
Find an agent.
I
don't mean to brush you off, but it's a very, very highly selective thing. The way to do it is to make a recording of your voices, but to make a record of all the voices that have been done won't help you any. What you have to do is prove your versatility and saying, if I were tuning a goat and here's his personality, this is what he'd sound like, then you're able to express something that might awaken in the agent some feeling of something that could be done. But there were a lot of people that said they could do Mel Blanc's voice after Mel died. The thing is that there are many, many people that could take a line that Mel Blanc had spoken, like "What's up, Doc?"
Right.
Or "I talked to Daffy," and they could do. But if you gave them a new line and asked them to do it the way Bugs would do it, that's where the artistry comes.
Mel Blanc was never met him and don't know what it was like to work with, but the work that he himself put forth, the versatility to watch a cartoon and realize he was the only voice in it. He was the one man that threw everything out we're listening to for the most part.
Well, the thing is that when we had finished the dialogue, Mel never even saw the dialogue till an hour before he recorded it.
Really?
And I'd go over the entire story with him, and Frizz would do the same way. And we would, actually, the intonation, the way the line is spoken, must be the director's. And Mel was a brigand. I mean, he could pick it up. And in an hour, he would have the whole thing in hand. But I would say, if I'm saying I was doing Daffy, I'd say, and I would read the line to him the way I want it spoken, because I'd been living with it for 10 weeks
sure.
at that time. So each line was carefully fashioned in my own mind. So I'd say, oh, no, you don't. Not again. Mm-hmm. So I'm all started. Okay, so
I know, what about
shoot him now.
What about the formation of a character when you have a new character and you're going to form the personality and the voice of that character to be recorded? Would Mel throw out a couple of three things and then you guys would say, yeah, I don't like this, I like that, try some more of that?
Well, for a new character, yes,
right.
We would probably try different things.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of recording, though, that wasn't true because we didn't know what the character was.
Right, right. But in the development, like with a Daffy Duck, did it just come out with it and, okay, that's it? Or did you guys tweak with it a lot?
Daffy Duck was... Daffy Duck's voice came from our producer, who would come back and say, what you working on, Philip?
He's
working on Philip. Put in lots of jokes.
lots of dope.
Jokes. So Tex would, so Cal Howard suggested to the Tex that I would make a funny voice for the duck. He didn't have that voice like that, like Bugs. Mm-hmm. The first voice wasn't like this voice the way it is now. And so we called Mel and says, can you do the voice of Leon Schlesinger, our producer? I should have done that. No way, it's all right. He's in heaven now.
Yeah. Chuck, we have to take a break, but when we come back, if you could stay one more, we have a surprise for you. One of your biggest fans is here, and we're just going to walk in. He wanted to shake your hand. He was across the hall doing a news radio thing, interview or something, and he'd like to come shake your hand. So if you could just stay there for two more minutes. Could
he doesn't mind calling.
I think he's fine with that. I think you're going to be happy to meet him. All right, we will, we'll take a bit of a break, and we'll have that surprise guest in here momentarily when we come back with Chuck Jones on the Mark and Brian program. All right, we're back. Mark and Brian radio program with Chuck Jones. Now, before we bring this person, this is what happened. You were into your last story during the break, and we looked through the glass into the newsroom, and there this man stood, and then come to find out that he is a major fan of yours, and he was doing an interview on the AM side, and he just wanted to shake your hand, so we thought we'd bring him in. Dan Quayle is here.
Oh, Dan, how are you?
Chuck, nice to see you.
You too.
Congratulations on a marvelous career. Oh, I'm just traveling around. I always stop in and see Brian and Mark.
See you again?
They always tell me if I'm into the Cindy, stop by. Give me some air. Yeah, no, what's this Brooklyn business, huh?
You know, it's just a shirt I happen to have. Somebody gave it to me for free, and I figure, hey, why not wear it?
Aren't they paying you here?
Not a great deal.
not a great deal. Bosses, if you're listening there, Mark needs a little bit of a raise here. This is a rather...
It's a shoddy shirt.
Yeah. A little submission.
Dan, what is your favorite character that Chuck Jones has done?
Roadrunner.
Roadrunner is your favorite?
No doubt about it.
Is it the one you relate to most?
And being in politics, I guess.
What he means is the coyote.
Yeah.
Howdy, Roadrunner.
The Roadrunner. See, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, so the Roadrunner was very popular over there, and I loved the cartoons.
My daughter went to school up north of me at Peach. Quarter Circle Key Bar Ranch School up the Black Canyon.
Okay.
And so we're familiar. I used to be square dancers too. Did you ever square dance?
I've tried it. Marilyn says that I'm not very good at it. So I leave that for the younger generation to say.
Yeah, I like the fact that it takes his wife to tell him he's not good at it. Didn't know what it's up.
From my viewpoint, you're the younger generation.
That's why he came in here, to make him feel good like that. See?
That's right.
There in front of you is an Oscar. That's the Academy Award there, Dan.
It's the first time I've actually seen one.
You ever held one?
Never held one. Heavy.
See, everybody, that's the first thing everybody says. It's a lot heavier.
It's impressive. That's something that I don't think I'll ever get.
Well, yeah, you never, never know. You're very young. You got a lot of time left. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe get into an acting career.
Who knows?
And it was between, how do you think I deal out there?
Well, it was between you and Clooney for Batman, wasn't it? Dan, thanks for coming in. You should come in when we have more time. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Again, congratulations on a wonderful career.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you, sir.
Bye-bye. As always, come back.
All right. Chuck Jones.
Oh, now, I'm all for corporal punishment if I'm not the recipient.
Good point.
Four right. people, it's great.
Now, one thing we did touch on a second ago, there is a, there's two new cartoons. Brian mentioned these earlier. One is Chariots of Fur. It's a Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote cartoon. And another is Another Froggy Evening, which is Michigan J. Frog. This is, finished, but it's not been released yet, and it will be released in conjunction with a full-length feature film.
That's right.
All right, now the way the bum made Michigan J. Frog dance, with his fingers, and with just the limp frog, it has to be some of the best and funniest and most on-the-money animation ever. That was brilliant.
And Chuck has just presented us with a cartoon cell of Michigan J. Frog.
Brains.
Man, and it's got the official Chuck Jones seal and the whole thing. You are always very giving and very kind when you drop by this program. We appreciate you so much.
Give a man a tool he can use. You guys
right now,
bring a lot of laughter, and if this will help you to continue.
Well, you're very kind. Now, let's talk for a moment about what they'll see on Friday night. Your showroom has cartoon original, in many cases, original cartoon cells from many of your classic cartoons, and these are available for purchase, are they not?
Yes.
Some
of them.
Okay.
So there's some limited editions that Chuck does. Most of those original production cells were destroyed back.
Oh.
I mean, millions of them, unfortunately, from the 30s, 40s, 50s.
Hanna-Barbera broke in, or?
Give me that! That's mine! Let me have it!
Yeah. So Chuck does a lot of new stuff, new limited editions that he continues to create, and those are on display as well.
Well, Chuck, let us say, we here on this program, we had a viewing party of the Academy Awards with listeners of ours down at the House of Blues on Sunset Boulevard. We mentioned this earlier. And we were sitting there watching the Academy Awards with them. Several hundred of them, as a matter of fact, close to 1,000. And when you were up on the big screen, the big monitor we had there for people to watch, when you were up there, it was very much for us like there was a relative up there that was receiving a long overdue Academy Award for a lifetime of fabulous work that you've put in. And we felt proud for those who have not only allowed us to benefit from your cartoons, but allowed us to speak with you personally and shake your hand, and that you continue to come back to the program.
And you've been so great to our listeners, too.
Well, you don't have to deserve something in order to enjoy it. And I can tell you that coming here is a very much a pleasure, because I respect you people, and I love your laughter, and that's all we try to do is to never talk down to an audience, be fully aware that we owed them the best that we could do, and that is about them. When you people watch the Academy Awards and cheered and told me that you cheered, this is one of the most endearing things that ever happened to me, because being up there is, you say, I don't belong here, you know, everybody else belongs here. Should be Frizz and Tex and the rest of them long gone, and that's too bad, you know. So here I am getting something I don't deserve, but still enjoying it.
Well, you, first of all, maybe you do actually believe that, but it isn't true. Your name is synonymous with quality.
Wait. If he doesn't think he deserves it, we'll take it. He brought it with him.
You just leave that here.
We'll have it. If you don't want it,
we'll take care of it for you.
You do deserve it.
Well, I'd have to split it down the middle.
Yes, you would. It'd be a half an Oscar. Okay. Well, please come back. You're welcome here anytime.
Thank you. Because, I'd like to.
Well, A, because we really, really like you. B, because we really, really respect you. And C, because we've got quite the wall of yourself that you bring every time you come.
Yeah, I'm trying to fix it so that you won't have to buy wallpaper anymore.
Believe me, that'd be...
Thanks again.
Keep it coming, Chuck.
Okay, thank you.
All right.